new beginnings, because everybody needs a new beginning at some point, even superheroes apparently. And I hope that you got a chuckle out of that. I hope that maybe if you've seen that before, you were reminded of Easter, by all means. If you haven't seen it before, I hope that you got, they needed a new beginning. But guess what? We don't always end up laughing when we really need a new beginning. Because sometimes we do that thing we thought we would never do, and we wish that we hadn't. And we wish so bad we could have a new beginning. Sometimes we hurt a person that we care deeply about, and it's too late, but you wish you could have a new beginning. If you haven't been there yet, here's my sad promise to you, you will be at some point. Everybody comes to a point where they need a new beginning. A lot of times, you have that when you disappoint someone, when you let someone else down. Have you ever disappointed anyone? Maybe you've made a promise. You promised that you would do something or you would be somewhere and you absolutely guaranteed that was going to happen, and when you didn't, you let someone else down. And in a way, you could use a new beginning there. But what about when you've hurt someone? Maybe when you said those words that you were just so angry at the time, they should never be spoken, but you said them. And the other person didn't quite recover from that because what you said really hurt. You can't take them back. It's too late. You wish you could just have a new beginning in that moment. Have you done that before? Maybe worse, maybe you violated trust. When someone placed their faith in you, someone said, I am going to trust you with this part of my life, and you violated that. It could be anything from telling a lie to cheating on someone. There are all kinds of ways that you can violate trust, but it is not a pretty thing when it happens. It hurts the other person. If you've been there, if you've done that, you've wished for a new beginning. Maybe you've just really, really let someone that mattered to you down. Someone that, sure, you hate to let anyone down, but this person is special, they're close to you, and when you let them down, you wish so bad. You could just rewind the clock. You could just have a new beginning. Have you been there? Because if you haven't been there, you will be at some point. Everyone needs a new beginning. And again, it hurts a lot when you know you let someone else down. And I think what makes it even worse, I think the thing that hurts us the most is when you let someone else down, and by doing that, you know you let yourself down. Maybe you don't care what other people think, and I wish you did, because Jesus' command to love other people is rooted in how much we care for others, but maybe you just don't. You can blow off your actions, and you can blow off your words, and whatever other people are thinking or doing, it's their deal. But when you know that you've let yourself down, when you know that you have fallen short of all that you really are and what you want other people to know you by, that's when it hurts the most. When you let someone else down, when you break trust, when you violate something that seems almost sacred with someone else, and in doing so, you let yourself down, that really hurts. And in those moments, I know you've wished for a new beginning. Welcome to Easter Sunday. Easter Sunday is all about new beginnings. Easter Sunday is all about the opportunity to start again. So I'm going to read this passage for you this morning, and this comes from John chapter 20, and it reads like this. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still very dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw the stone had been removed from the entrance. So she came running to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one that Jesus loved, and said, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they have put him." So Peter and the other disciple, they started for the tomb. Both were running, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent over and looked at the strips lying there, but he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came along behind him and went straight into the tomb. He also saw the strips lying there, as well as the cloth that they had wrapped around Jesus' head. The cloth was still lying in its place, separate from the linens. Finally, the other disciple, who had reached the tomb first also went inside. He saw and believed, but they still did not understand that Jesus would have to rise from the dead. Then the disciples went back to where they were staying. Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look in the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They've taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they've put him." At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize it was Jesus. Thinking that he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you've carried him away, please tell me where you've put him, and I will get him." And Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned toward him and cried in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Don't hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Now that is a new beginning. God always one-ups whatever we have, right? You can think of the new day or the new beginning to the week. Mary was thinking about caring for the body after the holiday and just going and decorating and taking care of her friend's body. And God does that most amazing thing, raises Jesus from the dead. Not resuscitates him to life, but resurrected him to new life. Something only God could do, something that was unprecedented, still stands as a one-time event. And this happened right there on this Easter morning. Jesus, who was crucified, died, and was buried, is face-to-face with Mary. Now that was how Jesus appeared to Mary, and the rest of John's gospel that I'm going to read to you here goes on to tell about how Jesus appeared to the other followers. So that was his meeting with Mary there in the garden, right outside the tomb, and when he spoke her name, she recognized him. This is how he appears to the others. On the evening of that first day of the week, when the disciples were together with the doors locked for fear of the Jewish leaders, Jesus came and stood among them. "Peace be with you," he said, because every time you have the doors locked and you're huddled in a room and someone magically appears in it, the first thing you feel is peaceful. Jesus just reminded them of that. "Peace be with you." At which point, I imagine one of the disciples said, "Note to self, get new locks." After he had said this, he showed them his hands, which had been pierced, and his side also. The disciples were overjoyed when they saw the Lord. This is how Jesus appears to Thomas. You may have heard him called Doubting Thomas. Thomas, one of the 12, was not with the others when Jesus had come. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." And of course, they're excited. And his response, he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my fingers where the nails were and place my hand into his side, I will not believe." A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were once again locked, and one of the disciples had checked to get new locks, Jesus came and stood among them. And wouldn't you know, their reaction was not one of peace, so he said, "Peace be with you." Then he turned to Thomas and said, "Place your finger here in my hands. Reach out and put your hand into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you believe. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Now, that's how Jesus appeared to all the disciples. That's how Doubting Thomas got the doubting taken out of his name, though we still use that today. But there's one other disciple that wasn't quite hanging out with the crowd, that wasn't as close to the others, and that wasn't having regular conversation with Jesus. A little fellow by the name of Peter. In case you don't have the background, let me give it to you. Here was the deal with Peter. See, Peter had followed Jesus as closely as the other disciples, debatably closer. Peter had been right there every time Jesus was teaching, every time he was eating, they were sharing a meal, every time Jesus was doing a miracle. Peter, in fact, got to be first hand while Jesus performed some of his miracles. He was very close to him. Peter was the one at the Last Supper, when they had gathered together before Jesus was to be taken away, tried, and ultimately crucified. Peter was the one, when Jesus was explaining that I must be taken from you, Peter said, "No, I will follow you to the death, Jesus. I will never leave you." This was Peter. He was very close and he was very sincere, only he was very human. So when, in fact, Jesus had been praying in the garden and the guards came to arrest him, well, Peter took off. And when Jesus was on trial and somebody said, "Hey, I think this is one of his followers," and they pointed to Peter, Peter said, "I don't know him." And if you're not familiar with the story, that happened three times. That while Jesus is being tried, more and more people say, "Hey, yeah, you know what? He's familiar. This guy knows Jesus." And Peter each time got more and more upset. "No, I do not know that man. I wasn't a part of him the last time. I swear I don't know him. I tell you, there's no way in the world. I don't have anything to do with him." I bet Peter wished for a new beginning. Peter had turned away from Jesus when Jesus, if he had a moment of need, was certainly in the most need. Peter had done the very thing he swore he wouldn't do. "Jesus, if you're going away, I'm going to follow you to the death, okay?" And here we are. Peter ended up running away three times, more adamantly each time, saying, "I have nothing to do with this man." And as Peter's going, or as Jesus is going around making his introduction to the disciples, well, Peter saw the tomb was empty, but he hadn't really spent time with Jesus. Why do you think that might be? I imagine the shame was huge. I imagine the hurt was very real. I imagine that knowledge of knowing I've let someone down and I wish I could have a new beginning weighed so heavily on him that he couldn't stand to look the man he had denied in the eyes. John chapter 21 tells us of how Jesus reintroduces himself to Peter. Afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples, this time by the Sea of Galilee. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, Nathanael, and the sons of Zebedee, the other disciples, they were together, and they were fishing. And when they had finished fishing, they brought in the catch, and Jesus was on the beach preparing a breakfast for them. Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John," Simon was Peter's alternate name, because if you're really cool in Bible times, you got two names, just go with it. But Simon, or Peter, son of John, Jesus asked him, "Do you love me more than these?" I'll be honest. I'm going to be upfront with you. I would have bawled at that question. Knowing that I ran away from Jesus, knowing that I swore I didn't know him, didn't have anything to do with him, and that he ended up dying. To see him again, if Jesus said, "Devin, do you love me?" I would have bawled. "Simon Peter, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said, "you know I love you." Jesus said, "Then feed my lambs." Just as an interesting note, Jesus did not have a flock of lambs. Jesus had a little lamb. Its fleece was white as snow. Jesus was referring to those in Israel that would be the church. Jesus was referring to those that had followed him and had grown in faith in him. Jesus was referring to those disciples. And he said, "Then take care of them." But again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said, "Take care of my sheep." A third time, Jesus asked him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Three times, Jesus asked him that question. Three times, Peter had denied Jesus. Just in case he didn't make that connection, it had to be painfully clear to him. I can't stress enough to you, but put yourself in his shoes. There is no doubting it. This is God's son. There is no denying it. This is the one they waited for. There is no hiding from the fact that Peter disgraced himself and abandoned Jesus, the Son of God, who asks him just as many times as Peter denied him now, Peter, do you love me? Peter was hurt. It says in Scripture in verse 17, Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him a third time, do you love me? And he said, I imagine very humbly, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Three times, vehemently more each time, Peter denied knowing Jesus. Three times, Jesus asked Peter, do you love me? Ouch. That had to hurt. If Peter could pause time and then rewind at any point in his life, it had to be on that day that he wanted to start again. Yet, in saying, feed my sheep, care for my sheep, look over my sheep, what Jesus is saying is you are forgiven. And in fact, Peter, not just forgiven, I welcome you back to those that were close to me. And I charge you with helping to care for these people. Imagine that level of forgiveness. Imagine standing face to face with the risen Christ. And if you've ever let someone down and it hurt them and it hurt you, Peter was there. Imagine being in this situation and hearing the words, I forgive you, now help take care of my sheep. I include you again. Welcome. Be a part of the brothers and sisters. That's where Peter was. Imagine that type of forgiveness. Peter got a new beginning, the kind that we all wish for sometimes, the kind that when you have really messed up and it hurts and you're hurting and others are hurting because of how you messed up, you wish you could have a new beginning. Peter got that new beginning. So here is the question. How did that affect him? Did that shape Peter's life? Did he just kind of wipe the sweat off his brow and go, cool? Did it make a lasting impression? I want you to hear this passage, and I want you to listen to it. The passage itself may not strike you as something huge and important, and yet it is. This is a great Easter passage. I'm going to read it to you. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. And do you know who wrote those words? Peter. If you look in your New Testament and you have the scriptures that record the story of Jesus and the difference that he made in the world, very close to the end of what we call the New Testament, the end of our Bible, you will find two books, 1 Peter and 2 Peter. And these books are based on letters that Peter wrote, and he wrote them to encourage other believers in the church. Man, if Peter can take the forgiveness that Jesus offers from the position he was and later write to people in the church to say, you can be forgiven, and you can have new life, and you can take hope because of what Jesus Christ did. If Peter can pen those words, then there is hope for any of you sitting out there this morning. There is hope for me. There is hope for the vilest offender. There is hope for the person that feels they're the worst person in the world, because Peter left Jesus himself when Jesus could have used a hand the most. Peter received forgiveness and later penned these words. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us, I think Peter would say, even me, new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. You feel like you need a new beginning? Do you feel like sometimes you wish you could restart? Have you ever let someone else down and in doing so let yourself down? Welcome to Easter. It's all about new beginnings. It's all about the resurrection of Jesus Christ and the forgiveness and the hope that he brings to you. This morning, there is no greater morning to celebrate a new beginning, and we're going to do that together through the act of communion. In the United Methodist Church, we practice an open communion, and that is anyone. Trust me, if you don't believe me, trust Peter. Anyone that can admit that they have not lived a perfect life, but they would turn to God and seek that perfect life, anyone that meets those conditions is welcome to come and celebrate communion with us, remembering that Jesus said, "You too can be forgiven. I offer you life and life to the fullest. I offer you hope and I offer you forgiveness." Just to give a few instructions, and I want to make sure everybody feels comfortable. If you want to receive communion, that you feel comfortable, come forward. We're going to do it a bit differently this morning. We're going to have communion ushers on that side at the corner of the railing and on that side at the corner of the railing. We're going to ask that you come.